silent, Matrak," the Grand Admiral cut her off, "or you will share in his imprisonment."
"I will not be silent,"
the Matrak snarled.
"Enogri accused of treason to the other clan must be given over to the clan Dynasts for the ancient rules of discovery and judgment. It is the law."
"I am not bound by Nogri law," the Grand Admiral said coldly. "Kabarak has been a traitor to the Empire. By Imperial rules will he be judged and condemned."
"The Clan Dynasts will demand..."
"The Clan Dynasts are in no position to demand anything," the Grand Admiral barked, touching the comlink cylinder pocketed beside his tunic insignia. "Do you require a reminder of what it means to defy the Empire?" Leia heard the faint sound of the Matrak's sigh.
"No, my lord,"
she said, her voice conceding defeat. The Grand Admiral studied her. "You shall have one, anyway." He touched his comlink again, and abruptly, the interior of the Dooka flashed with a blinding burst of green light. Leia jerked her head back into Chewbacca's legs, squeezing her eyelids shut against the sudden searing pain ripping through her eyes and face. For a single horrifying second, she thought that the Dooka had taken a direct hit, a turbo laser blast powerful enough to bring the whole structure down in flaming ruin around them. But the afterimage burned into her retina showed the Grand Admiral still standing proud and unmoved, and belatedly, she understood. She was trying desperately to reverse her sensory enhancement when the thunderclap slammed like the slap of an angry Wookiee into the side of her head. She would later have a vague recollection of several more turbo laser blasts, seen and heard only dimly through the thick gray haze that clouded over her mind, as the orbiting Star Destroyer fired again and again into the hills surrounding the village. By the time her throbbing head finally dragged her back to full consciousness, the Grand Admiral's reminder was over, the final thunderclap roiling away into the distance. Cautiously, she opened her eyes, squinting a little against the pain. The Grand Admiral was still standing where he'd been, in the center of the Dooka. And as the last thunderclap faded into silence, he spoke. "I am the law on Honnagar now, Matrak," he said, his voice quiet and deadly. "If I choose to follow the ancient laws, I will follow them. If I choose to ignore them, they will be ignored. Is that clear?" The voice, when it came, was almost too alien to recognize. If the purpose of the Grand Admiral's demonstration had been to frighten the Matrak half out of her mind, it had clearly succeeded.
"Yes, my lord."
"Good." The Grand Admiral let the brittle silence hang in the air for another moment. "For loyal servants of the Empire, however, I am prepared to make compromises. Kabarak will be interrogated aboard the Chimera, but before that, I will allow the first stage of the ancient laws of discovery." His head turned slightly. "Rook, you will remove Kabarak Clan Kimbar to the center of Nesteo and present him to the Clan Dynasts. Perhaps 3 days of public shaming will serve to remind the Nogri people that we are still at war."
"Yes, my lord."
There was the sound of footsteps and the opening and closing of the double doors. Hunched against the ceiling above her, his sense in unreadable turmoil, Chewbacca rumbled softly to himself. Leia clenched her teeth hard enough to send flashes of pain through her still throbbing head. Public shaming, and something called the Laws of Discovery. The Rebel Alliance had unwittingly destroyed Honnagar. Now it seemed she was going to do the same to Kabarak. The Grand Admiral was still standing in the middle of the Dooka.
"You are very quiet, Matrak," he said.
"My lord has ordered me to be silent,"
she countered.
"Of course," he studied her. "Loyalty to one's clan and family is all well and good, Matrak. But to extend that loyalty to a traitor would be foolish, as well as potentially disastrous to your family and clan."
"I have not heard evidence that my third son is a traitor."
The Grand Admiral's lip twitched.
"You will,"
he promised softly. He walked toward the double doors, passing out of Leia's sight, and there was the sound of the doors opening. The footsteps paused, clearly waiting, and a moment later the quieter paces of the Matrak joined him. Both left, the doors closed again, and Leia and Chewbacca were alone. Alone. In enemy territory, without a ship, and with their only ally about to undergo an Imperial interrogation.
"I think, Chewie," she said softly, "we're in trouble."
Chapter 14.
One of the first minor truths about interstellar flight that any observant traveler learned was that a planet seen from space almost never looked anything at all like the official maps of it. Scatterings of cloud cover, shadows from mountain ranges, contour-altering effects of large vegetation tracts, and lighting tricks in general all combine to disguise and distort the nice, clean, computer-scrubbed lines drawn by the cartographers. It was an effect that had probably caused a lot of bad moments for neophyte navigators, as well as supplying the ammunition for innumerable practical jokes played on those same neophytes by their more experienced shipmates. It was therefore something of a surprise to find that on this particular day, and coming in from this particular angle, the major continent of the planet Jomark did indeed look almost exactly like a precisely detailed map. Of course, in all fairness, it was a pretty small continent to begin with. Somewhere on that picture-perfect continent was a Jedi Master. Luke tapped his fingers gently on the edge of his control board, gazing out at the greenish-brown chunk of land now framed in his X-Wing's canopy. He could sense the other Jedi's presence. Had been able to sense it, in fact, since first dropping out of hyperspace. But so far, he'd been unable to make a more direct contact.
"Master Sabaoth," he called silently, trying one more time. "This is Luke Skywalker. Can you hear me?"
There was no response. Either Luke wasn't doing it right, or Sabaoth was unable to reply. Or else this was a deliberate test of Luke's abilities. Well, he was game.
"Let's do a sensor focus on the main continent, R2,
he called, looking over his displays and trying to put himself into the frame of mind of a Jedi Master who'd been out of circulation for a while. The bulk of Jomark's land area was in that one small continent. Not much more than an oversized island, really. But there were also thousands of much smaller islands scattered in clusters around the vast ocean. Taken altogether, there were probably close to 300,000 square kilometers of dry land, which made for an awful lot of places to guess wrong.
"Scan for technology and see if you can pick out the main population centers."
R2 whistled softly to himself as he ran the X-Wing sensor readings through his programmed lifeform algorithms. He gave a series of beeps, and a pattern of dots appeared superimposed on the scope image.
"Thanks," Luke said, studying it. Not surprisingly, most of the population seemed to be living along the coast, but there were a handful of other smaller centers in the interior as well, including what seemed to be a cluster of villages near the southern shore of an almost perfectly ring-shaped lake. He frowned at that image, keyed for a contour overlay. It wasn't just an ordinary lake he saw now, but one that had formed inside what was left of a cone-shaped mountain, with a smaller cone making a large island in the center. Probably volcanic in origin, given the mountainous terrain around it. A wilderness region thick with mountains, where a Jedi Master could have lived in privacy for a long time. And a cluster of villages nearby, where he could have emerged from his isolation when he was finally ready to do so. It was as good a place to start as any. "Okay, R2, here's the landing target," he told the droid, marking it on his scope. "I'll take us down. You watch the sensors and let me know if you spot anything interesting."
R2 beeped a somewhat nervous question.
"Yes, or anything suspicious," Luke agreed.
R2 had never fully believed that the Imperial attack on them the last time they'd tried to come here had been purely coincidence. They dropped in through the atmosphere, switching to repulsor lifts about halfway down and leveling off just below the tops of the highest mountains.
Seen up close, the territory was rugged enough, but not nearly as desolate as Luke had first thought. Vegetation was rich down in the valley areas between mountains, though it was sparse on the rocky sides of the mountains themselves. Most of the gaps they flew over seemed to have at least a couple of houses nestled into them, and occasionally even a village that had been too small for the X-Wing's limited sensors to notice. They were coming up on the lake from the southwest when R2 spotted the mansion perched up on the rim.
Never seen a design like that before,
Luke commented. You getting any life readings from it?
R2 warbled a moment.
Inconclusive.
Well, let's give it a try,
Luke decided, keying in the landing cycle.
If we're wrong, at least it'll be a downhill walk to everywhere else.
The mansion was set into a small courtyard bordered by a fence that appeared more suited for decoration than defense. Killing the X-Wing's forward velocity, he swung the ship parallel to the fence and set it down a few meters outside its single gate. He was in the process of shutting down the systems when R2's trilled warning made him look up again. Standing just outside the gate, watching them, was the figure of a man. Luke gazed at him, heart starting to beat a little harder. The man was old, obviously. The gray-white hair and long beard that the mountain winds were blowing half across his lined face were evidence enough of that. But his eyes were keenly alert, his posture straight and proud and unaffected by even the harder gusts of wind. And the half-open brown robe revealed a chest that was strongly muscled.
Finish shutting down, R2,
Luke said, hearing the slight quaver in his voice as he slipped off his helmet and popped the X-Wing's canopy. Standing up, he vaulted lightly over the cockpit side to the ground. The old man hadn't moved. Taking a deep breath, Luke walked over to him.
Master Sabaoth,
he said, bowing his head slightly.
I'm Luke Skywalker.
The other smiled faintly.
Yes,
he said.
I know. Welcome to Jomark.
Thank you,
Luke said, letting his breath out in a quiet sigh. At last. It had been a long and circuitous journey, what with the unscheduled stopovers at Merkur and Sluis Van. But at last, he'd made it. Sabaoth might have been reading his mind. Perhaps he was.
I expected you long before now,
he said reproachfully.
Yes, sir,
Luke said.
I'm sorry. Circumstances lately have been rather out of my control.
Why?
Sabaoth countered. The question took Luke by surprise.
I don't understand.
The other's eyes narrowed slightly.
What do you mean you don't understand?
He demanded.
Are you or are you not a Jedi?
Well, yes.
Then you should be in control,
Sabaoth said firmly.
In control of yourself, in control of the people and events around you. Always.
Yes, Master,
Luke said cautiously, trying to hide his confusion. The only other Jedi Master he'd ever known had been Yoda. But Yoda had never talked like this. For another moment, Sabaoth seemed to study him. Then, abruptly, the hardness in his face vanished.
But you've come,
he said, the lines in his face shifting as he smiled.
That's the important thing. They weren't able to stop you.
No, Luke said. They tried, though. I must have gone through 4 Imperial attacks since I first started out this way.
Sabaoth looked at him sharply.
Did you now? Were they directed specifically at you?
One of them was, Luke said. For the others, I just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Or maybe the right place at the right time, he corrected.
The sharp look faded from Sabaoth's face, replaced by something distant.
Yes,
he murmured,
gazing into the distance toward the edge of the cliff and the ring-shaped lake far below.
The wrong place at the wrong time. The epitaph of so many Jedi.
He looked back at Luke.
The Empire destroyed them, you know.
Yes, I know,
Luke said.
They were hunted down by the Emperor.
and Darth Vader.
And one or two other dark Jedi with them,
Sabaoth said grimly. His gaze turned inward.
Dark Jedi like Vader. I fought the last of them on...
He broke off, shaking his head slowly.
So long ago.
Luke nodded uncomfortably, feeling as if he was standing in loose sand. All these strange topic and mood shifts were hard to follow. A result of Sabaoth's isolation? Or was this another test? This time of Luke's patience? A long time ago, he agreed.
But the Jedi can live again. We have a chance to rebuild.
Sabaoth's attention returned to him.
Your sister,
he said.
Yes. She'll be giving birth to Jedi twins soon.
Potential Jedi, anyway, Luke said, a little surprised that Sabaoth had heard about Leia's pregnancy. The New Republic's publicists had given the news wide dissemination, but he'd have thought Jomark too far out of the mainstream to have picked up on it.
The twins are the reason I came here, in fact.
No,
Sabaoth said.
The reason you came here was because I called you.
Well, yes, but...
There are no buts, Jedi Skywalker.
Sabaoth cut him off sharply.
To be a Jedi is to be a servant of the Force. I called you through the Force, and when the Force calls, you must obey.
I understand.
Luke nodded again, wishing that he really did. Was Sabaoth just being figurative? Or was this yet another topic his training had skipped over? He was familiar enough with the general controlling aspects of the Force. They were what kept him alive every time he matched his lightsaber against blaster fire. But a literal call was something else entirely.
When you say the Force calls you, Master Sabaoth, do you mean...
There are two reasons why I called you.
Sabaoth interrupted him again.
First, to complete your training. And second, because I need your help.
Luke blinked. My help? Sabaoth smiled wanly, his eyes suddenly very tired.
I am nearing the end of my life, Jedi Skywalker. Soon now, I will be making that long journey from this life to what lies beyond.
A lump caught in Luke's throat.
I'm sorry,
was all he could think to say.
It's the way of all life.
Sabaoth shrugged.
For Jedi, as well as for lesser beings.
Luke's memory flicked back to Yoda, lying on his deathbed in his Dagobah home, and his own feeling of helplessness that he could do nothing but watch. It was not an experience he really wanted to go through again.
How can I help?
He asked quietly.
By learning from me,
Sabaoth said.
Open yourself to me. Absorb from me my wisdom and experience and power. In this way, you will carry on my life and work.
I see,
Luke nodded, wondering exactly what work the other was referring to.
You understand, though, that I have work of my own to do.
And are you prepared to do it?
Sabaoth said, arching his eyebrows.
Fully prepared? Or did you come here with nothing to ask of me?
Well, actually, yes, Luke had to admit. I came on behalf of the New Republic, to ask your assistance in the fight against the Empire.
To what end?
Luke frowned. He'd have thought the reason self-evident.
The elimination of the Empire's tyranny. The establishment of freedom and justice for all the beings of the galaxy.
Justice?
Sabaoth's lip twisted.
Do not look to lesser beings for justice, Jedi Skywalker.
He slapped himself twice on the chest, two quick movements of his fingertips.
We are the true justice of this galaxy. We too, and the new legacy of Jedi that we will forge to follow us. Leave the petty battles to others, and prepare yourself for that future.
I... Luke floundered, searching for a response to that.
What is it your sister's unborn twins need?
Sabaoth demanded. They need... well, they're someday going to need a teacher, Luke told him, the words coming out with a strange reluctance. First impressions were always dicey, he knew. But right now, he wasn't at all sure that this was the sort of man he wanted to be teaching his niece and nephew. Sabaoth seemed to be too mercurial, almost on the edge of instability. It's sort of been assumed that I'd be teaching them when they're old enough, like I'm teaching Leia. The problem is that just being a Jedi doesn't necessarily mean you can be a good teacher. He hesitated. Obi-Wan Kenobi blamed himself for Vader's turn to the dark side. I don't want that to happen to Leia's children. I thought maybe you could teach me the proper methods of Jedi instruction.
A waste of time,
Sabaoth said with an offhanded shrug.
Bring them here. I'll teach them myself.
Yes, Master, Luke said, picking his words carefully. I appreciate the offer, but as you said, you have your own work to do. All I really need are some pointers.
And what of you, Jedi Skywalker?
Sabaoth interrupted him again.
Have you yourself no need of further instruction? In matters of judgment, perhaps?
Luke gritted his teeth. This whole conversation was leaving him feeling a lot more transparent than he really liked.
Yes, I could use some more instruction in that area, he conceded. I think sometimes that the Jedi Master who taught me expected me to pick that up on my own.
It's merely a matter of listening to the Force,
Sabaoth said briskly. For a moment his eyes seemed to unfocus. Then they came back again.
But come, we will go down to the villages, and I will show you.
Luke felt his eyebrows go up.
Right now?
Why not?
Sabaoth shrugged.
I have summoned a driver. He will meet us on the road.
His gaze shifted to something over Luke's shoulder.
No, stay there, he snapped.
Luke turned. R2 had raised himself out of the X-Wing's droid socket and was easing his way along the upper hull. That's just my droid, he told Sabaoth.
He will stay where he is,
Sabaoth bit out.
Droids are an abomination. Creations that reason, but yet are not genuinely part of the Force.
Luke frowned. Droids were indeed unique in that way, but that was hardly a reason to label them as abominations. But this wasn't the time or the place to argue the point.
I'll go help him back into his socket, he soothed Sabaoth,
hurrying back to the ship. Drawing on the Force, he leaped up to the hull beside R2.
Sorry, R2, but you're going to have to stay here, he told the droid. Come on, let's get you back in.
R2 beeped indignantly.
I know, and I'm sorry,
Luke said, herding the squat metal cylinder back into its socket.
But Master Sabaoth doesn't want you coming along. You might as well wait here as on the ground. At least this way you'll have the X-Wing's computer to talk to.
The droid warbled again, a plaintive and slightly nervous sound this time.
No, I don't think there's any danger,
Luke assured him.
If you're worried, you can keep an eye on me through the X-Wing sensors.
He lowered his voice to a murmur.
And while you're at it, I want you to start doing a complete sensor scan of the area. See if you can find any vegetation that seems to be distorted, like that twisted tree growing over the Darkside cave on Dagobah, okay?
R2 gave a somewhat bemused acknowledging beep.
Good. See you later,
Luke said, and dropped back to the ground.
I'm ready,
he told Sabaoth. The other nodded.
This way,
he said, and strode off along a path leading downward. Luke hurried to catch up. It was, he knew, something of a long shot, even if the spot he was looking for was within R2's sensor range. There was no guarantee that the droid would be able to distinguish healthy alien plants from unhealthy ones, but it was worth a try.
Yoda, he had long suspected, had managed to stay hidden from the Emperor and Vader only because the dark side cave near his home had somehow shielded his own influence on the Force. For Sabaoth to have remained unnoticed, it followed that Jomark must also have a similar focus of dark side power somewhere. Unless, of course, he hadn't gone unnoticed. Perhaps the Emperor had known all about him, but had deliberately left him alone. Which would in turn imply... what? Luke didn't know, but it was something he had better find out. They had walked no more than 200 meters when the driver and vehicle Sabaoth had summoned arrived. A tall, lanky man, on an old Sorosub recreational speeder bike, pulling an elaborate wheeled carriage behind it.
Not much more than a converted farm cart, I'm afraid,
Sabaoth said, as he ushered Luke into the carriage and got in beside him. Most of the vehicle seemed to be made of wood, but the seats were comfortably padded.
The people of Chainu built it for me when I first came to them.
The driver got the vehicles turned around, no mean trick on the narrow path, and started downward.
How long were you alone before that?
Luke asked. Sabaoth shook his head.
I don't know, he said. Time was not something I was really concerned with. I lived, I thought, I meditated. That was all.
Do you remember when it was you first came here?
Luke persisted. After the outbound flight mission, I mean. Slowly, Sabaoth turned to face him, his eyes icy.
Your thoughts betray you, Jedi Skywalker,
he said coldly.
You seek reassurance that I was not a servant of the Emperor.
Luke forced himself to meet that gaze.
The master who instructed me told me that I was the last of the Jedi, he said. He wasn't counting Vader and the Emperor in that list.
And you fear that I'm a dark Jedi as they were?
Are you?
Sabaoth smiled, and to Luke's surprise, actually chuckled. It was a strange sound coming out of that intense face.
Come now, Jedi Skywalker,
he said.
Do you really believe that Joris Sabaoth, would ever turn to the dark side?
The smile faded.
The Emperor didn't destroy me, Jedi Skywalker, for the simple reason that during most of his reign, I was beyond his reach. And after I returned...
He shook his head sharply.
There is another, you know. Another besides your sister. Not a Jedi. Not yet. But I felt the ripples in the Force. Rising and then falling.
Yes, I know who you're talking about, Luke said. I've met her.
Sabaoth turned to him, his eyes glistening.
You've met her?
He breathed.
Well, I think I have, Luke amended. I suppose it's possible there's someone else out there who...
What is her name?
Luke frowned, searching Sabaoth's face and trying unsuccessfully to read his sense. There was something there he didn't like at all.
She called herself Mara Jade, he said.
Sabaoth leaned back into the seat cushions, eyes focused on nothing.
Mara Jade,
he repeated the name softly.
Tell me more about the outbound flight project,
Luke said, determined not to get dragged off the topic.
You set off from Yaga Minor, remember? Searching for other life outside the galaxy? What happened to the ship and the other Jedi Masters who were with you?
Sabaoth's eyes took on a faraway look.
They died, of course,
he said, his voice distant.
All of them died. I alone survived to return.
He looked suddenly at Luke.
It changed me, you know.
I understand,
Luke said quietly. So that was why Sabaoth seemed so strange. Something had happened to him on that flight.
Tell me about it.
For a long moment,
Sabaoth was silent. Luke waited, jostled by the bumps as the carriage wheels ran over the uneven ground.
No,
Sabaoth said at last, shaking his head.
Not now. Perhaps later.
He nodded toward the front of the carriage.
We are here.
Luke looked. Ahead, he could see half a dozen small houses, with more becoming visible as the carriage cleared the cover of the trees. Probably 50 or so all told. Small, neat little cottages that seemed to combine natural building elements with selected bits of more modern technology. But about 20 people could be seen moving about at various tasks. Most stopped what they were doing as the speeder bike and carriage appeared. The driver pulled to roughly the center of the village and stopped in front of a throne-like chair of polished wood, protected by a small, dome-roofed pavilion.
I had it brought down from the high castle,
Sabaoth explained, gesturing to the chair.
I suspect it was a symbol of authority to the beings who carved it.
What's it used for now?
Luke asked. The elaborate throne seemed out of place somehow in such a casually rustic setting as this.
It's from there that I usually give my justice to the people,
Sabaoth said, standing up and stepping out of the carriage.
But we will not be so formal today. Come.
The people were still standing motionless, watching them. Luke reached out with the Force as he stepped out beside Sabaoth, trying to read their overall sense. It seemed expectant, perhaps a little surprised, definitely awed. There didn't seem to be any fear, but there was nothing like affection either.
How long have you been coming here?
He asked Sabaoth.
Less than a year,
Sabaoth said, setting off casually down the street.
They were slow to accept my wisdom, but eventually I persuaded them to do so.
The villagers were starting to return to their tasks now, but their eyes still followed the visitors.
What do you mean, persuaded them?
Luke asked.
I showed them that it was in their best interest to listen to me.
Sabaoth gestured to the cottage just ahead.
Reach out your senses, Jedi Skywalker. Tell me about that house and its inhabitants.
It was instantly apparent what Sabaoth was referring to. Even without focusing his attention on the place, Luke could feel the anger and hostility boiling out of it. There was a flicker of something like murderous intent.
Uh-oh, he said. Do you think we should?
Of course we should,
Sabaoth said.
Come!
He stepped up to the cottage and pushed open the door. Keeping his hand on his lightsaber, Luke followed. There were two men standing in the room, one holding a large knife toward the other, both frozen in place as they stared at the intruders.
Put the knife down, Tom,
Sabaoth said sternly.
Svan, you will likewise lay aside your weapon.
Slowly, the man with the knife laid it on the floor. The other looked at Sabaoth, back at his now unarmed opponent.
I said lay it aside,
Sabaoth snapped. The man cringed back, hastily pulled a small slug thrower from his pocket, and dropped it beside the knife.
Better,
Sabaoth said, his voice calm, but with a hint of the fire still there.
Now, explain yourselves.
The story came out in a rush from both men at once. A loud and confusing babble of charges and countercharges about some kind of business deal gone sour. Sabaoth listened silently, apparently having no trouble following the windstorm of fact and assumption and accusation. Luke waited beside him, wondering how he was ever going to untangle the whole thing. As near as he could understand it, both men seemed to have equally valid arguments. Finally, the men ran out of words.
Very well,
Sabaoth said.
The judgment of Sabaoth is that Svan will pay to Tom the full wages agreed upon.
He nodded at each man in turn.
The judgment will be carried out immediately.
Luke looked at Sabaoth in surprise.
That's all? He asked.
Sabaoth turned a steely gaze on him.
You have something to say?
Luke glanced back at the two villagers, acutely aware that arguing the ruling in front of them might undermine whatever authority Sabaoth had built up here. I just thought that more of a compromise might be in order.
There is no compromise to be made,
Sabaoth said firmly.
Svan is at fault, and he will pay.
Yes, but... Luke caught the flicker of sense a half second before Svan dived for the slug thrower. With a single smooth motion, he had his lightsaber free of his belt and ignited. But Sabaoth was faster. Even as Luke's green-white blade snapped into existence, Sabaoth raised his hand, and from his fingertips flashed a sizzling volley of all too well-remembered blue lightning bolts. Svan took the blast full in the head and chest, snapping over backwards with a scream of agony. He slammed into the ground, screaming again, as Sabaoth sent a second blast at him. The slug thrower flew from his hand, its metal surrounded for an instant by a blue-white coronal discharge. Sabaoth lowered his hand, and for a long moment the only sound in the room was a soft whimpering from the man on the floor. Luke stared at him in horror, the smell of ozone wrenching at his stomach. Sabaoth!
You will address me as master.
The other cut him off quietly. Luke took a deep breath, forcing calm into his mind and voice. Closing down his lightsaber, he returned it to his belt and went over to kneel beside the groaning man. He was obviously still hurting, but aside from some angry red burns on his chest and arms, he didn't seem to be seriously hurt. Laying his hand gently on the worst of the burns, Luke reached out with the Force, doing what he could to alleviate the other's pain.
Jedi Skywalker, Sabaoth said from behind him. He is not permanently damaged. Come away.
Luke didn't move. He's in pain.
That is as it should be,
Sabaoth said.
He required a lesson, and pain is the one teacher no one will ignore. Now come away.
For a moment, Luke considered disobeying. Svan's face and sense were in agony.
Or would you have preferred that Tom lie dead now?
Sabaoth added. Luke looked at the slug thrower lying on the floor, then at Tarm standing stiffly with wide eyes and face the color of dirty snow.
There were other ways to stop him,
Luke said, getting to his feet.
But none that he will remember longer.
Sabaoth locked eyes with Luke.
Remember that, Jedi Skywalker. Remember it well, for if you allow your justice to be forgotten, you will be forced to repeat the same lessons again and again.
He held Luke's gaze a pair of heartbeats longer before turning back to the door.
We are finished here. Come.
The stars were blazing overhead as Luke eased open the low gate of the high castle and stepped out of the courtyard. R2 had clearly noticed his approach. As he closed the gate behind him, the droid turned on the X-Wing's landing lights, illuminating his path.
Hi, R2,
Luke said, walking to the short ladder and wearily pulling himself up into the cockpit.
I just came out to see how you and the ship were doing.
R2 beeped his assurance that everything was fine.
Good,
Luke said, flicking on the scopes and keying for a status check anyway.
Any luck with the sensor scan I asked for?
The reply this time was less optimistic.
That bad, huh?
Luke nodded heavily as the translation of R2's answer scrolled across the X-Wing's computer scope.
Well, that's what happens when you get up into mountains.
R2 grunted a distinctly unenthusiastic sound, then warbled a question.
I don't know, Luke told him. A few more days at least. Maybe longer if he needs me to stay. He sighed. I don't know, R2. I mean, it's just never what I expect. I went to Dagobah expecting to find a great warrior, and I found Master Yoda. I came here expecting to find someone like Master Yoda, and instead I got Master Sabaoth.
R2 gave a slightly disparaging gurgle, and Luke had to smile at the translation.
Yes,
Well, don't forget that Master Yoda gave you a hard time that first evening, too, he reminded the droid, wincing a little himself at the memory. Yoda had also given Luke a hard time at that encounter. It had been a test of Luke's patience and of his treatment of strangers. And Luke had flunked it, rather miserably. R2 warbled a point of distinction. No, you're right, Luke had to concede. Even while he was still testing us, Yoda never had the kind of hard edge that Sabaoth does. He leaned back against his headrest, staring past the open canopy at the mountaintops and the distant stars beyond them. He was weary. Wearier than he'd been probably since the height of the last climactic battle against the Emperor. It had been all he could do to come out here to check on R2. I don't know R2. He hurt someone today. Hurt him a lot. And he pushed his way into an argument without being invited, and then forced an arbitrary judgment on the people involved, and... He waved a hand helplessly. I just can't see Ben or Master Yoda acting that way. But he's a Jedi, just like they were. So which example am I supposed to follow? The droid seemed to digest that. Then almost reluctantly, he trilled again. That's the obvious question, Luke agreed. But why would a dark Jedi of Sabaoth's power bother playing games like this? Why not just kill me and be done with it? R2 gave an electronic grunt, a list of possible reasons scrolling across the screen. A rather lengthy list. Clearly the droid had put a lot of time and thought into the question. I appreciate your concern, R2, Luke soothed him. But I really don't think he's a dark Jedi. He's erratic and moody, but he doesn't have the same sort of evil aura about him that I could sense in Vader and the Emperor. He hesitated. This wasn't going to be easy to say. I think it's more likely that Master Sabaoth is insane. It was possibly the first time Luke had ever seen R2 actually startled speechless. For a minute, the only sound was the whispering of the mountain winds playing through the spindly trees surrounding the high castle. Luke stared at the stars and waited for R2 to find his voice. Eventually, the droid did. No, I don't know for sure how something like that could happen, Luke admitted as the question appeared on his screen. But I've got an idea. He reached up to lace his fingers behind his neck, the movement easing the pressure in his chest. The dull fatigue in his mind seemed to be matched by an equally dull ache in his muscles, the kind he sometimes got if he went through an overly strenuous workout. Dimly, he wondered if there was something in the air that the X-Wing's biosensors hadn't picked up on. You never knew, but right after Ben was cut down, back on the first Death Star, I found out that I could sometimes hear his voice in the back of my mind. By the time the Alliance was driven off Hoth, I could see him too. R2 twittered. Yes, that's who I sometimes talk to on Dagobah, Luke confirmed. And then right after the Battle of Endor, I was able to see not only Ben, but Yoda, and my father too. Though the other two never spoke, and I never saw them again. My guess is that there's some way for a dying Jedi to... Oh, I don't know. To somehow anchor himself to another Jedi who's close by. R2 seemed to consider that, pointed out a possible flaw in the reasoning. I didn't say it was the tightest theory in the galaxy, Luke growled at him, a glimmer of annoyance peeking through his fatigue. Maybe I'm way off the mark. But if I'm not... It's possible that the five other Jedi Masters from the Outbound Flight Project wound up anchored to Master Sabaoth. R2 whistled thoughtfully. Right, Luke agreed ruefully. It didn't bother me any to have Ben around. In fact, I wish he had talked to me more often. But Master Sabaoth was a lot more powerful than I was. Maybe it was different with him. R2 made a little moan. And another rather worried suggestion appeared on the screen. I can't just leave him, R2. Luke shook his head tiredly. Not with him like this. Not when there's a chance I can help him. He grimaced, hearing in the words a painful echo of the past. Darth Vader, too, had needed help, and Luke had similarly taken on the job of saving him from the dark side.
and had nearly gotten himself killed in the process.
What am I doing?
He wondered silently.
I'm not a healer. Why do I keep trying to be one?
Luke?
With an effort, Luke dragged his thoughts back to the present.
I've gotta go,
he said, levering himself out of the cockpit seat. Master Sabaoth's calling me. He shut down the displays, but not before the translation of R2's worried jabbering scrolled across the computer display.
Relax, R2,
Luke told him, leaning back over the open cockpit canopy to pat the droid reassuringly.
I'll be all right. I'm a Jedi, remember? You just keep a good eye on things out here, okay?
The droid trilled mournfully as Luke dropped down the ladder and onto the ground. He paused there, looking at the dark mansion, lit only by the backwash of the X-Wing's landing lights, wondering if maybe R2 was right about them getting out of here. Because the droid had a good point. Luke's talents didn't lean toward the healing aspects of the Force. That much he was pretty sure of. Helping Sabaoth was going to be a long, time-consuming process, with no guarantee of success at the end of the road. With a Grand Admiral in command of the Empire, political infighting in the New Republic, and the whole galaxy hanging in the balance, was this really the most efficient use of his time? He raised his eyes from the mansion to the dark shadows of the rim mountains surrounding the lake below. Snow-capped in places, barely visible in the faint light of Jomark's three tiny moons. They were reminiscent somehow of the Minari Mountains south of the Imperial City on Coruscant. And with that memory came another one. Luke standing on the Imperial Palace rooftop, gazing at those other mountains, sagely explaining to 3PO that a Jedi couldn't get so caught up in galactic matters that he was no longer concerned about individual people. The speech had sounded high and noble when he'd given it. This was his chance to prove that it hadn't been just words. Taking a deep breath, he headed back toward the gate.